Levine, and this is the Burrow Report.
The market in China in life sciences IPOs ignited in 2009, and it has been on a tear ever since, with companies in the sector raising $5.9 billion in 2010 alone. The feverish activity isn't limited just to new issues, but can also be seen in a surge in everything from venture financings to merger and acquisition activity. We spoke to Greg Scott, president and founder of the consulting firm China Bio and publisher of China Bio Today, about the emergence of China as a life sciences powerhouse, what's driving the activity, and the transformation of China as merely a source of cheap labor into a provider of innovative new drugs. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the last time we spoke in the podcast was back in August, and it was about a year at that point since the IPO market in China had really taken off. China Bio Today, your publication, just reported that Shanghai Pharma raised the size of its IPO by 50% because of demand. What does that say about the IPO market for life science companies in China, and what's happening there over the past year or so?
Well, it's still very hot in China, as we talked about in August of last year, when it was literally hot in China. But even now through the winter, IPOs have continued to be very hot there. So kind of summarizing the activity in 2010, there were a total of 33 IPOs that went out for a total of about $5.9 billion U.S. So that puts the average IPO for life science companies in China at about $177 million, which, as you know, is a pretty respectable return for investors. Typically, anything over $100 million should at least return a reasonable return to the investors. So seeing an average of $177 million is pretty strong. And obviously, this is a very strong IPO market, especially when compared to the U.S. market, which is still, particularly in the life sciences area, but generally overall is still pretty much a dead IPO market here.
So the IPO market has grabbed a lot of attention, but it's overshadowed other areas of investment that may speak to the future strength of the sector in China. What's been happening on the venture capital front?
Well, the venture capital side has really been very strong as well. 2010 represented a record year for China in the life science space. There was over $1 billion invested in 56 deals, which is also the largest number of deals we've seen since we started tracking the data back in 2006. And another noteworthy item is that the average deal size is $21 million, which is a very strong showing even relative to the U.S. In the U.S., life science deals are typically about $10 million average. It sort of bounces up and down between 9 and 11 in the U.S. over the last probably 10 years or so, but China is far outpacing that.
So what kind of companies are getting financed? Are these distribution companies and CROs, or are we now seeing more traditional biotechs that are going to develop innovative medicines?
Well, this is another real surprise for us when we went back and summarized the data. 63% of the deals, both in terms of number and dollar volume, are drug deals. So these are companies generally that are either developing novel drugs in China or have already established a distribution base of generics and are moving into the novel drug space. So you would typically expect, as you were saying, more service and medical device companies, but those, while still strong in China, are overshadowed by the investments in drug companies.
And you've actually noted a sharp rise in the patents of new molecular entities. How is China doing on the innovation front, and what's the government doing to stimulate those types of companies?
Well, as you know, there's quite a bit of government funding available in China for the life science industry as a whole, and in particular, the central government has identified biotechnology and novel drug development specifically as one of its key areas of investment. So the Mega New Drug Development Program, which we've been talking about for about a year now, is putting over $12 billion into new drug development in China. And this is the only program funded by the central government that's exclusive to new drug development. In addition to that, you have a lot of funding coming out of the provinces and even some of the local and municipal areas funding new drug development in China.
So M&A activity has also taken a big jump. What does that activity tell you about going on? Who's buying? What types of assets are being coveted?
Here again, we were a little bit surprised when we looked at the data from 2010. And again, drug companies are by far and away in the lead in M&A in China. So roughly 83% of the deals done in the M&A area were drug companies versus service or medical device or diagnostic companies. And the dollar volume is also fairly representative in that percentage as well, 81% at about $2.8 billion in M&A activity. Another thing we noticed is that the deal size has increased very significantly, up about threefold from what it was in 2009 to about $70 million per acquisition. So this is sort of putting to bed the rumor that assets and companies in China don't have high valuations or high value. Certainly we're seeing now that even some of the big pharma like Pfizer and Sanofi, Aventis and GSK have paid very high sums for companies in China.
Well, we've certainly seen a lot of big pharma companies trying to do deals to strengthen their presence in China. How have these deals reflected the changing view of China? Are these companies looking at China today as a source of labor or research, or are they looking as this market as drug buyers or as a source of innovation?
All of the above, frankly. The companies have all pretty much moved research and development to China. So we've seen Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Novartis, and now Lilly, as well as GSK, establish major R&D centers primarily in the Shanghai area, Sanofi, Aventis, and Bayer in Beijing. But really it's Shanghai that's become the central focus in terms of R&D. They also have business development groups that are out looking for novel assets, and that's something that we occasionally get involved in, helping them find novel assets in China. And we found that there's quite a bit of interesting development coming out of the universities and institutes in China at this point.
So we've certainly seen a big pickup of academic partnerships between big pharma and leading universities here. Is the same type of thing propelling deal-making in China?
It definitely is, and we've seen a big shift in the big pharma from, say, 3 years ago, where they were only interested in late-stage molecules, of which there basically were none in China for the global market. Now there's starting to be a few late-stage molecules available in China, but the big pharma are really looking for early-stage assets in China.
Any sense of whether they're looking at those assets for their potential in Asian markets or across the globe?
They're really looking more for global assets. They, in some instances, will be interested in China-only assets, but the primary interest are in global assets.
So I don't know whether you chalk it up to sour grapes, but certainly some people viewing the China market, particularly the IPO market, and talking about bubbles, and any reason to believe that we're seeing the formation of a bubble, or is there reason to believe that there's a lot more to come here?
Well, I think it depends on what area or what perspective you're looking at the China market. The China market overall is now the number two global market for pharmaceuticals, and several of the big pharma now either stated that the China market is their number two market moving to number one, or we're seeing data that indicates that's the case. So definitely big pharma now, and for that matter, all companies really need to be focused on China now that's the number two market, having surpassed Japan last year.
Greg Scott, president and founder of the consulting firm China Bio and publisher of China Bio Today. Greg, thanks as always.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Thanks for listening. For information on Burl & Company conferences and publications, go to burlandco.com. That's burlandco.com. And be sure to join us at burlreport.com for daily coverage of the life sciences industry. And sign up for our free e-newsletter, the Burl Weekly Brief, by hitting the sign-in link at the top of our website.